right, here we are. Oh, here we go. Hey, we got it. How's everybody doing here at Pequod's Pizza? Give me a hand. There we go. There we go. Broadcasting live from Pequod's Pizza in Chicago, home of the world-famous caramelized crust. It's a download here on WGN Radio. All right, come on down, have some pizza. We got a lot of stuff. We're giving away tickets. We've got some gift certificates to give away, all sorts of stuff, and some amazing guests lined up. So enjoy the pizza and enjoy the guests. How about that, huh? That's a good combo. We're going to talk with Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley this hour. He's a representative of the 5th Congressional District here in Illinois, and as a matter of fact, he represents Pequod's. How about that? You're not too many times you're going to get your representative to be here while you eat dinner. We'll talk with him about current news, but also about his beloved Blackhawks. Quiggs was at the White House ceremony last week with the team. Also, Mike Fouché from AlderTrack will join us to talk about whether or not we're going to get all our money back from the red light and speeding tickets. How many people here got your red light? Yeah, see? Yeah. You get your money back now. How about it? You excited? Yeah, there you go. What are you going to do with that? $55. Pay for Pequod's, right? All right, good. Good. Also, the primary is getting closer, so why are candidates distancing themselves from Mayor Emanuel? We'll talk with Mike about that. Also tonight, live music from one of Chicago's greatest punk rock musicians. Josh Caterer was the frontman of the band The Smoking Popes, who exploded on the scene in the mid-90s, breaking out in Algonquin church basements to major label deals with Capitol Records. We'll talk with Josh about the time he's also going to bring his guitar, so we'll have some live music as well. Also, the successful Second City show, Date Me, an OK Cupid experiment, is on stage at the Up Theater. I'm excited about this. Robin Norris will be here to talk about the show, which was written by putting up fake dating profiles to interact with real people. Ooh, that's going to be juicy. Sounds juicy. All that plus Pequod's Pizza. I mean, can't get better than that, right? News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. Put your hand together for Pete Zimmerman. Woo! In the flesh. In the flesh. All right, well, let's start tonight with the carryout. This is the nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. All right, here are today's top stories. President Obama announced today that he wants to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay. This was a campaign promise back in 2008. He's finally getting around to it. There are only about 100 prisoners left at the facility that houses mostly terrorist suspects. The president cited that the prison is a stain on the country's reputation. Then our current stain on the country's reputation spoke out, saying he wanted to keep it open. Donald Trump spitballed, saying he'd do it on the cheap and he'd make Cuba pay for it, which is just classic. That's what Trump comes up with every situation we have is, well, make somebody else pay for it. We all go, yeah, somebody else is going to pay for it. Naturally, all the presidential candidates weighed in, and they all hate it. But I'm not sure how much the American people care about closing the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Now, a grocery store in Lakeview? No, he can't do it, right? Close that store? No. Or if Obama came out and said he was closing Pequod's? Come on. Some serious protests going on. Pequod's lives matter, right? All right. Election night tonight in Nevada. That's last night. I am actually saying it wrong. It's Nevada. I found this out last night, so I should change my tone. Nevada.
It's also Illinois, not Illinois.
Yeah. Also, I heard somebody, I forgot who it was a sports person or someone saying, I think it was Chris Collins. Northwestern saying, you know, we're going to beat Illinois this week. I was like, come on, man. You play at Northwestern. You coach Northwestern. It's Illinois. What's a Duke? Nevada. Have a good night, man. Looks like Trump's going to win the caucus in Nevada. I mean, come on, he better. It's a land of casinos, buffets, and bloated tan businessmen. He better get 80% of the vote, right? I would imagine if you go into Caesar's Palace, you'd have a hard time picking out Donald Trump out of a lineup. They all look the same. Has anyone been to Caesar's Palace lately? It's like everybody walks around like, looks like Donald Trump and has a robe on. It's a whole thing. Have you been to Caesar's Palace lately, Pete?
I haven't been recently, but I have in the past. Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's just black and gold.
Yeah. There's more Make America Great hats per capita there than anywhere else.
The Democrats already did their caucus on Saturday, and the turnout was so low. How low was it? The turnout was so low, Lil Jon was like, wait, that's too low. Anybody get that? Okay. All right. City and private developers are fighting over the old post office building above Congress and the Eisenhower. The behemoth building was dormant for years, even after a British developer bought the property. So the city wants the developer to act, or they're going to take it over. What would you put in that building? You guys know the building I'm talking about? Like, I don't want it to be condos. That's just boring. Like, we don't want to go big or go home if you're Chicago, right? For me, I'd go world record. I would make it the biggest Panda Express in the world. The whole thing is just one Panda Express. What would you do, Pete?
I would make it a Halloween store.
Or like a Washington Mutual Bank or something.
Yeah, bank.
Yeah, bank would be good.
We need right. A gas station.
We have
right
ideas.
Off the
if come to the download. We'll fill that building. Mm-hmm. A water park, indoor water park.
Yes.
Right? I'm liking it. Kesha is performing at Loyola University this weekend. Kesha is in the news because a judge ruled she couldn't get out of her contract with Sony Music, even though she alleged she was raped by her producer, Dr. Luke. Students plan to protest, but far away from the event as to not to trigger Kesha. According to Chicagoists, they also want to make sure that student protesters don't bring glitter to the protest because glitter clogs up the water filtration system on campus. Man, just think what Bill Ayers would think of that protest, right? And right now he's like, man, we're going to be, oh, man, no glitter, guys. You cannot bring glitter. It messes up the toilets here at the dorm, guys. No glitter. In weather, are you guys ready for the snow tomorrow? No way. I mean, we're acting like because this is the first time we've had snow in a while that it's going to be a huge deal. I was watching the news today, and they were like, we don't even have time for an intro. Let's get right to it. There's going to be 3 inches of snow. Are you ready? Maybe one. Like, that's essentially the news. Expect about 4 inches of snow in Chicago, but probably more in Kankakee County, northwest Indiana. It should be starting around rush hour and then continue all the way to the rush hour because that's how a good snowstorm is. If we do get accumulation and we have to dig out a parking spot, may I suggest a few new items for the dibs list?
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe this is for the traditional dibs list. These are download-approved items for dibs. Uh-huh. If you bought a TV recently, a TV box will do. It's got to be 32 inches and up, right?
Mm-hmm.
A child's bicycle will hold your parking spot. Can't be a regular bike because it'll get stolen. Anyone who steals a kid's bike, you're off the list, right? But if it's a regular bike, that's a bad idea. And finally, leftover Pequods. You just put half of that pan pizza in the street and hold your parking. And everyone's like, hey, Pequods. Yeah, I know that pizza. That's great. I won't park there. Yeah, they dug it out. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk sports. It's a download live from Pequods here at 2207 North Clybourn. Come on down. Have dinner. Join us later tonight. Josh Cater from the Smoking Pope is going to perform live. That plus much more on 720 WGN.
He's the new sensation in the nation. Pizza Boy USA. He's the flying
saucer. It's a download here. WGN Radio. How's it going, Pequods? Give it up. He's getting ready now. Listen to that. You can tell where everyone's at in their dinner. You know, because they're clapping, and they're like, no, I'm not clapping right now. I got pizza in my mouth. Broadcasting live for Pequod's Pizza in Chicago, home of the world-famous caramelized crust. Very excited to be here. I love this place. I always love this place. We're continuing with the carryout. Coming up at 8:30, Mike Fouché from AlderTrack is going to be here. We're going to talk some politics. Who else want to talk politics on a Tuesday night in Chicago? And also Mike Quigley. Congressman Quigley is going to join us. We'll talk Guantanamo Bay. We'll talk the replacement for Justice Scalia. And we'll talk about his love of the beloved Blackhawks coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour. All right, but let's keep going with the carryout and talk about sports. Spring training is underway. You excited? Excited about spring training? Can you keep that excitement up for about 2 months? Man, ton of time for shagging fly balls, practicing bunting. Double plays? Can we try double play? That's what they're doing right now. Can we try double play? And then they all just go eat at the Outback Steakhouse and Like we said, everybody wears their cargo shorts. I'm excited. The Cubs, nothing new. They're actually praising Jason Hayward and John Lackey before they even take the field. Quick, someone look at the pre-press on Corey Patterson and Antonio Alfonseca, because I feel like we've heard this story before. Oh. Pete, are you excited about the Cubs? You got to
be. I'm very excited, yes.
Are you one of these guys who are like, 90 games, we won 90, we're going to win 110 this year?
I think about the Cubs no matter how bad they are. When they had like Kevin Orie at third base, I was like, yeah, this is going to be a solid year. Yeah, this is going to be, he's the guy.
All Orie's got to do, 25 homers and hit That's 270. It.
So, yeah. But I'm very excited.
You're excited? Well, I'm excited. When did they start playing? They're essentially doing like they're playing running bases right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. A lot of fungos.
It's like so fun to watch the newscast of it because all it is shots of like a guy fielding a ground ball and throwing it across like you did in Little League. I mean, it's very Little League right now. So it's fun to watch, I guess, but not.
As you pointed out, too, the favorite thing is when, all right, let's go to Marchie and Greco, who's out by the pool. And he's in, you know, his rayon shirt.
He's got his male capri pants on, his rayon shirt. He's so obvious that he didn't even watch any of the practices and he just did golf. He just did, like, rounds and rounds and rounds of Arizona golf. When I went to spring training, I went when I was a kid because my grandpa lived in Cave Creek, Arizona. I got the vibe when he got there that the players didn't really want you there. Like, I was like, oh, cool. And I'm like, oh, it's just practice. And then they were just hitting on it. There were women. And they were like the 1989 Cubs just hitting on women. And I'm like, I shouldn't be here. My part doesn't start till Wrigley Field, right? Okay, I got it. I'm sorry. So that was that. The Sox picked up Jimmy Rollins yesterday. Classic Sox move. Get the old-timer to come in. He'll flash some skills for about a month. Then in August, he'll go 0 for 70 and break his hip. I don't know about you. And maybe, I mean, they got rid of Alexi Ramirez, but this seems like a downgrade. But we'll see what happens, right?
I thought they were going to get Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, they just didn't. I mean, Rickon said that he says it's not over yet, that he's still going to bring some guys in. But they already reported to camp. Like, when did they bring them in? Like, do they do that a lot when they come in? I don't know. I would think that you'd already have your team ready for that. Well, Bulls forward Taj Gibson said that coach Fred Hoiberg is getting after players and being much more vocal in practice. Hoiberg was called out by Jimmy Butler early in the year, and maybe this is a new look for the much-embattled first-year coach. But you got to ask, what kind of yeller is he going to be? Is he going to go hoarse like Tibbs, yelling at players and refs all game? Come on! Go on! Like, you watch him, like he's just like every single play is like life and death with Coach Tibbs. Or does he go more first name, subtle disappointment style like Phil Jackson? Tony! And then just shake his head. You know what I mean? Phil Jackson had, like, he was, they always, you know, he's will be known for all the head games. But he could flash you that look that was just like, I'm so disappointed in you.
You knew.
Did you ever see Bernie Mac do the Phil Jackson impression?
So no. Good.
At the end of Kings of Comedy, he does it on the court. Scotty! Tony! That's my favorite. Tony! You know, Kukoc, she's like, I don't know which way to play the game. Well, how do you play it?
Tony, triangle.
Blackhawks get the Predators on Thursday night.
Yeah.
We play the Predators way too much. I'd be okay with playing that garbage squad like two times a year.
You hate the Predators.
I hate the Predators, man. Right? They suck, right?
They suck. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. All right, see? Now we're getting somewhere. Who's got a yellow jersey? Speaking of Little League, that's Little League-y. That's like the Jackie Robinson West. They had yellow, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
The Predators. Yeah. Come on.
I'm trying to sell my Jackie Robinson West on eBay.
You are?
Yeah.
Your shirt?
Yeah.
I'll buy it.
I got all sucked up.
I got one. I'll take another one. I'm gonna wear that around so ironically. I'm going to be like, oh, every street fair this summer, I'm going to be the Jackie Robinson West champs. It's hilarious. What about the Predators? The Predators, like, what do you do? I mean, come on. Because it's just a cast of Nash. Who's the fans of the Predators? Like, is it Vince Gill? Does Vince Gill own the Predators?
He's on the board of directors.
Is he? Of course he is.
Yeah.
That's annoying. Brad Paisley. They get a hat trick. They throw the cowboy hats out there. Right? So dumb. Hayden Panettiere gets on the screen like, hey, guys, can't hear you. Let's get this stadium rocking. And then everyone cheers for Hayden Panettiere.
That's my Blackhawks bit.
I don't know. I hope that they make the playoffs. Listening to Judd and Troy, it sounds like the Predators are down on their luck. They're almost out. They're
fighting for
holding
a playoff
to the eight,
spot.
But I don't, again, they do the – I just bring Judd back up because they do the NHL playoffs like Common Core, like the math formula of who goes where.
Yeah,
it's
you
not
never can
like
figure
the straight up thing we learned as a kid. The best is the number one and the worst is the eight. There's like all this other stuff that goes in. So it'd be interesting to see if where the Blackhawks end and where the Predators land. I wouldn't be surprised if we get them in the first round again.
Sweet.
Which is a great party to go to Nashville, but that's it. You don't go there to play hockey. Jerks. All right. That's good. I'm playing to the crowd. We're at the Pequod's Blackhawks bar. Ripping on them. All right. We got much more coming up here. That's the carryout for tonight. Let's take a break. Coming up, Mike Foucher is going to join us. We're going to talk about area politics and Congressman Mike Quigley will join us on the phone, so stay with us. It's a download live from Pequod's in Lakeview.
I don't want to be no personal pizza. I just want to live my life. I don't want to eat no personal pizza. Baby, give me just one
It's a download here on WGN Radio. We're broadcasting live from Pequod's Pizza in Chicago, Lincoln Park. I said Lakeview earlier. What's that?
I don't know that place.
What is
that?
Home of the world-famous caramelized crust. We're here till 11 o'clock tonight. Great guests lined up. Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes will be here performing live a little bit later in the show. Also, Robin Norris from Second City is going to be here. She does a new show, Date Me. It's a hit.
Date You?
Date Me, an OkCupid experiment.
Okay.
Where she faked online dating profiles, and then the interactions is what she turned into a stage show.
That
Second
is my
City.
Personal nightmare.
That's it.
My personal nightmare.
Sitting next to me right now, Mike Foucher. He's the man behind AlderTrack.com, a subscription news service that covers all things Chicago politics. Good to see you, Mike.
It's great to be here.
So, you know, we're going to be joined by Congressman Mike Quigley in just a second here. We're sitting in his district here at Pequod's, the Fighting Fifth.
The Fighting Fifth?
This is a historic congressional district.
Right?
It's always fighting something. Yeah. But talk about the significance of the Fifth District.
All right, well, you know, the Fifth District has had, like, some of the most interesting people, right? So the guy that had the job right before him, Rahm Emanuel. The guy that had the job before Rahm Emanuel, Rod Blagojevich.
Right.
Wow, interesting, huh? Not a good trend, maybe. And before Rod Blagojevich was Mike Flanagan,
right?
The last Republican to be a congressman in Chicago. Mike Flanagan beat Dan Rostenkowski in an upset in 1994.
This was when Rostenkowski was going to jail, though.
Yeah, right.
This was a mail fraud. Stamps.
Yeah, all right. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
But,
yeah,
you know, he went to jail after he lost.
Right.
So, you know.
But before that, long time served by Dan Rostenkowski.
Congressman for, like, forever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he was chair of the Ways and Means and all that other great
stuff.
Well,
let's bring in Congressman Mike Quigley of the 5th District. Mike Quigley is in Washington, D.C. Congressman, thanks for being here. We're live at Pequod's.
Hey, great to be on. You're in my neighborhood. Go to Webster Street, watch a movie, and bring home a Pequod's pizza.
There you go.
There you go. Hey. Good plug.
Get name checked by the congressman. So, Congressman, you know, we had a big – we'll start – you know, you were a part of one of the bigger Chicago news stories here in the last couple of weeks, the Blackhawks going to the White House.
Right.
So tell us about that experience, being there with the president honoring once again the Blackhawks.
You know, I got to lead up with the week before I was on – Air Force One with the president, and he talked about why the Blackhawks were special. He said, hey, your team, they're up there with Patriots and the Cardinals and the other great dynasties, and he talked for a long time about how it all starts with great management.
Wow.
So we're at the White House, and besides being such a great festive mood, you got the sense from the management guys there that this wasn't the culmination of a great sense of accomplishment, but they were in the midst of it, that this is going to go on for a while, and they were obviously in a very good mood about that.
Well, I mean, imagine that. I mean, the concept that a team in Chicago, besides, I guess, the Chicago Bulls, are in the middle of a dynasty, it's got to be something, and to be such a big fan of it. I mean, I would assume that you're all over it and letting everybody know in Washington that, you know, the Blackhawks are legit.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. It's my only pushback with Cardinal fans. I ask them to show me their rings. Oh, wait.
Nice. Nice. Nice.
Well, Congressman, let me ask you about today. It's some big news coming out of Washington, the president announcing that he wants to close Guantanamo Bay. This was a campaign promise back in 2008, and as he wraps up his two terms, he's finally getting around to it. What's your reaction to the announcement today?
Well, it's the right thing to do. Whether we can pull it off is an entirely different thing. We got to remember that General David Petraeus and Colin Powell, among others, have said closing Gitmo is in the best interest of the United States, that there are hundreds of international terrorists and a lot of other scary people currently housed in U.S. supermax prisons. No one's ever escaped those prisons. It would save money, and it would take away a recruiting tool for terrorists. It's the right thing to do, but as we've seen in the 6 or 7 years that it's been floated, a lot of people are not above scaring people with this and using it in an unfortunate way to push back.
Well, how does he get it done? I mean, obviously pushing and bringing it up now, is this the right political time to do it?
And Congressman, the Congress passed a bill a couple of years ago that blocks anybody moving from Guantanamo to the mainland. Isn't that right?
Well, there are various measures that have been passed. They've gone back and forth. I think he'd like to do it by executive action. Probably doesn't think he can do it because of that measure. But I think he's hoping that Congress changes its mind. I sadly don't see that happening. You ask if it's the right political time. You've got to ask yourself, what else can he do? The president has about 10 months left in his term.
Right.
I know he has a burning passion to get more done, and this is one of those on his bucket list.
You know, go ahead, Mike.
So, you know, getting back to that, I mean, is there any willingness within Congress in order to allow him to have any final things on his agenda, or are the Republicans just going to block every last move?
Well, I think, unfortunately, most of these measures are going to be blocked. I think that Speaker Ryan is a smart person politically. I think that's why the government wasn't shut down. I think that's why you saw a two-year budget deal. I think he's trying to show that the mainstream Republican establishment can govern in juxtaposition with his far right, which right now scares a lot of mainstream Republicans and most of the rest of us.
Congressman,
whether that means we're going to accomplish other things as a result, you know, I'm not sure. We should have done immigration reform a long time ago. There's a long list there of things that we should have done. I'm not sure we get most of those things done, or if the Senate's going to get anything done on a Supreme Court nominee.
That's what I was going to ask about. You know, today more Republican leaders step forward saying we're not even going to listen. We're not even, you know, don't even nominate anybody because you're not going to get anyone through. You being in Congress as a Democrat, what's your reaction to the continuing back and forth about the appointment of a justice from President Obama?
You got to remember, we're talking about what's going to be at least a year vacancy. And I wish no one harm, but let's understand that we have a lot of justices who are getting quite old. How long do we want to go without a full Supreme Court under those circumstances? In the final analysis, sometimes both parties misbehave in the same sort of area, and I'd like to get to a point where we all agree that we're not going to do something like this or put horrible writers on must-pass appropriation bills.
Right.
But as we get close to the election, I guess the gloves come off.
Yeah, right. So we're going to let you go here because we're live at Pequod's and we got some stuff lined up. But I do want to say, you know, at the beginning of the show, I was talking about my newfound hatred for the Nashville Predators. The Hawks play the Predators on Thursday. What's your take on the game?
Are you pro or con Predators?
Yeah, look, I despise any owner who says, we're going to put restrictions on that because we don't want, hey, if your fans are so loyal, wear the jerseys. You know, show up, buy the tickets. You know, just because you're embarrassed that you don't have real fans, don't take it out on us. But you get the ultimate payback because in 2010, let's just remember, Hawks were down in that game when Kane scored with, 2 seconds to go, tie it, put it in overtime. They overcome a major penalty on Hossa, and they came back and beat him. So the best revenge is living well.
Congressman Mike Quigley, thanks for joining us from Washington tonight.
Enjoy the pizza, guys.
Thank you. There you go. Congressman Quigley, live here at Pequod's. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We will talk about whether or not you're going to get your money back from your red light or speeding ticket.
Wow.
We'll talk more about that coming up here on The Download, live for Pequod's in Lincoln Park. Stay with us. It's The Download, live for Pequod's Pizza up here in Chicago in Lincoln Park, home of the world famous caramelized crust. WGN Radio, I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. You just had your second piece. You've only been here for like 10 minutes.
I know,
too.
Man.
Mike Fouché of AlderTrack.com is my guest. That's a subscription newsletter. It covers all things Chicago politics. Do you hear the room got hushed because they want to know the answer? Red light tickets.
Speeding camera tickets.
Are they really going to refund this money?
The city might have to.
Why?
So there was a class action suit that was brought by a group of attorneys who are saying that the city didn't use the appropriate methods in order to charge people, and they didn't give them an appropriate period of time in order to protest the charges. And a judge was so enraged, and her ruling was so specific and so strict, that it may be that the city will have to give back hundreds of millions
now,
of dollars.
Okay, you and I have been on every week for the last year, and we've been talking about the budget woes of the city.
Yeah, right.
This would be one area that if you had to give back hundreds of million dollars, where's that money come from?
Exactly. I mean, that's money that's already spent. That means the city would have to raise more taxes in order to pay it back. So essentially, they would have to get the money from us in order to give it back to us.
Oh, God.
Although I know that I'll come out ahead because I have about $1,000 of tickets that I've had. So thanks, everybody.
So that's – but I mean, is there – it's not a done deal because it was a judge that got angry to just kept it going. But
right.
We still have a long way to go, and there's still a chance
it'll
they
certainly
say
be
not.
Appealed. It'll certainly be appealed.
Yeah, right.
And it'll be a while. It's not like expect a nice check next month.
I mean, so in 2035, look in the mailbox.
Well,
you might get a $75 check back.
I would say probably by the end of Rahm's administration. So, you know, sometime in the next 3 years, we should expect to see something resolved on this. But it really, the way I'm told that this opinion was written by the judge, it's going to be relatively difficult for the city to appeal.
Yeah. Well, that just doesn't seem very good for Mayor Emanuel. And, you know, making
no.
a transition
the
to
hits
the
hits keep on coming.
Yeah, making a transition to the primary. It's interesting because all these races are lining up, and there was an article this week about how you're starting to see more and more candidates and people involved in the election distancing themselves
right.
from Mayor Emanuel.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, essentially, him and Madigan, they're the chair of the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, you'd think that considering how close he was to Hillary Clinton or all the things that he did for the Clinton family, that she would be wrapping her arms around him when she came to town and, you know, hey, Rahm Emanuel, he's going to help me win Illinois. No. I mean, you know, he's been almost invisible when it comes to presidential politics.
Do you think that's going to be the case that leads its way all the way through the general if Hillary Clinton comes out of Super Tuesday and
absolutely.
She's a winner?
Absolutely.
Is Rahm Emanuel a no? He's just persona non grata?
I'd say he's pretty close to toxic.
Wow.
You know, people in D.C. have figured out that there's not a whole lot of good that comes out of it. And, you know, he's not a popular guy. And, you know, we've all seen the polls. His approval ratings are very low, and they're not coming back up, which is actually jamming up all kinds of things in city council. You know, today there was a bunch of aldermen who stood up to say that they're protesting the $6 million new tobacco tax. Now, let's wrap our brains around this.
Right.
A $6 million tax. That's
very
nothing.
That's very small.
That's nothing. That's like a tear in the face of Chicago. You know, it's nothing. And yet, this is turning into a major issue. Apparently, the mayor is roiling the waters across City Hall. Everybody in City Hall is talking about how Rahm Emanuel really wants to push this. He's enraged. He's going to try and make it happen at the next city council meeting. It failed at the last city council meeting, which is unheard of.
Right.
So, you know, I think the guy's got some tough things ahead of him.
Well, let's talk about the primary here, because the big story, obviously, is the poll came out yesterday with the Republicans. Donald Trump leads big in Illinois. But locally, there's still some races of significance. The primary for state's attorney is still...
It's still very high.
And Alvarez still has the lead.
So Anita Alvarez still has the lead, and she and Kim Fox, who is one of the challengers, are very close in terms of how much money they've raised. And then there's Donna Moore, the third candidate. She's about $300,000-$400,000 behind them. This is crucial because it costs $550,000 a week to get a full buy of television in Chicago broadcast, and that's what everybody's going to need. They're going to need – this is a campaign, this is a race that's going to be won with a TV commercial.
Right.
And, you know, that's going to be critical.
Well,
that's
talked
how
about
Anita Alvarez
last,
won the first time.
Yeah, 4 years ago she won.
8 years ago.
8 years ago she won. This year we get her jogging.
Right.
That's the ad I keep seeing
is
Alvarez jogging. I'm like,
she's
physically
so
fit. That's great. I'll vote for
her. And Kim Fox's ad starts off with a shot of a metal bathtub in a bathroom. And she says, when the shots rang out when I was a kid, this is where I went to go hide.
Right.
Man.
She's playing off her childhood at Cabrini Green, right?
And yeah. And, I mean, that's pretty intense. You know, that I think it's completely different. It's really going to be about evoking feelings. And I think that's how people are going to be responding
to
this race.
Let me ask you, do you see that? I mean, it already is. But do you see that race as the buys are placed for the last couple of weeks being negative? Are we going to get a lot of... Alvarez, Laquan McDonald. Are we going to get Kim Fox? Has never been in the courtroom. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's going to be basically dumping on one another as much as possible.
No more jogging.
No more jogging. And I think that there are two things you got to do as a candidate. The first is you have to define yourself, and then the other you have to define your opponent. And Anita Alvarez, because she's the incumbent, she has less personal defining that she needs to do. So I think that we should expect just a dump-a-thon that's going to go on Kim Fox from Anita Alvarez.
Yeah. Some of the other races of interest, the one that I've been paying attention to, Ken Duncan, the Democrat from
on
Chicago.
The near west side.
So interesting because he stepped out of line with Madigan. He was not there for the big labor vote this past fall.
Right. And now they want to
now they want to get rid of him, and they're actually going hard at him.
They're going hard.
Negative ads about his past, it's some domestic violence problems.
Yeah.
And it's
he
all.
He did a jail term when he was younger.
Yeah. I mean, they're going after him. Where does this race stand?
So, okay. There's going to be 13,000 people that are probably going to vote in this election for this race, the state representative race. And the two candidates together, Ken Duncan and Juliana Stratton, they've either raised or other organizations have come in to spend a total between the two and all the other independent groups, $2.2 million so far.
So what does that come down to?
So that comes to about $179 per vote.
Wow.
Now, they're not even close to done because the last 3 weeks are when the real money comes pouring in. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw another $1 million in this tiny little race for 13,000 votes. This race is really all for the money. If Ken Duncan stays in, Bruce Rauner continues to be able to keep Mike Madigan from overturning his vetoes.
Let me ask you this question, just a political question about Ken Duncan. Because he still is a Democrat, and he has aligned himself with Rauner in a couple of instances because he says, I crossed over the aisle, I don't care about politics, blah, blah, blah. But he's not necessarily a guy I would trust if I were Rauner to be like, I'm going to trust this Democrat to get my stuff through. Is there any worry that Ken Duncan is truly independent with his voice and his vote, and he's not going to go one way or other? Or does Madigan actually screw himself a little bit by pushing all this stuff at him that he's going to be like, I'm never going to vote with this guy from here on out?
I think, well... So put it in a little context. The word independent is really fun, right?
Yeah, right,
you know, because
right,
it means
right.
anything that you want
right,
it to mean.
Right, right.
I'm independent. That means I don't want to talk to you. I don't know. So Ken Duncan, back in the Rod Blagojevich days, was the big Rod Blagojevich backer in the worst time possible.
He was the one saying no impeach. Like
no
that
impeachment,
kind of stuff.
All that other
He's backing
stuff.
Him.
And you know, Rod Blagojevich was saying, great, great, I'll take care of you. Don't worry about it. I'll help you out. You know. Feeding him other stuff, you know, giving him deals and other stuff for his district. And from Ken Duncan's perspective, great. That works well for him. He has always been the master of getting whatever he needs in order to make things roll along a little better for him.
Let me ask you one last question. What are the other races we should be paying attention to?
So there's another West Side State Senate race, which is Patricia Van Pelt, the incumbent, is being challenged by former mayoral candidate and alderman Bob Fioretti.
Speaking of red light cameras,
right.
He's big against red light cameras.
He was anti-red light camera. Patricia Van Pelt is not doing as well in the money race as he is, but she's been getting endorsements. She actually, Illinois Go, the group that supports Bruce Bronner, actually dropped a mailer for her this last week.
Really?
Which was kind of a surprise. And she's not an Illinois Go kind of person. So, you know, kind of wondering.
Why would he do that? Is he afraid of Bob Fioretti? Because Bob Fioretti's more of a progressive Democrat from Chicago?
Who knows? I have no idea.
Is that what we're seeing? Are we seeing the governor get involved in primaries on the other side of the aisle? I mean, with Duncan, he is, and now he is here with Van Pelt. What's
well,
going on?
I mean, that's certainly what Illinois Go is doing.
They're
trying to do that. And then there's another race on the south side along the lakefront, which is between incumbent Christian Mitchell and Jay Travis, a woman who's running against him. I'm sorry, a man that's running against him for, I think, the second time. And for the third time, actually, the Chicago Teachers Union is coming out strong against Christian Mitchell. And they're really trying to hammer away at him. But, you know, typically when you get to the third time that you're trying to take somebody it's probably not going to happen.
Mike Fouché, he's the man behind AlderTrack.com, a subscription news service that covers all things Chicago politics. Mike, good to see you. Thanks for coming
Great
by.
Great to be
pizza.
Here. Thanks for the pizza, man.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. We're live at Pequot's Pizza in Chicago. More to come with the download here on 720 WGN.
When I get a serious craving, something I want to eat. I need some cheese, tomatoes and olives, and maybe even some meat. I need some pizza, pizza, pizza.
There you go, a little pizza song for you here as we eat our pizza. Broadcasting live tonight from Pequot's Pizza in Chicago, home of the world-famous caramelized crust. It's a download here on WGN with you till 11 o'clock. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up this hour, we're going to talk with Robin Norris. She is the woman behind a show called Date Me, an OK Cupid experiment. I love this. So essentially, she set up 38 fake online dating profiles on OK Cupid, like different characters. She's funny, right? And people would actually interact. They'd want to ask her out, do this kind of stuff, all that. And then what would happen is she would take the interactions and turn them into a show at Second City. So we're going to talk with Robin coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour about how that all came to be. And then also Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes, which I'm so excited about, Pete.
The best. Can't wait.
Right? I feel like I've seen the Smoking Popes in, like, every place that you're not supposed to see music. Like, I saw them, like, in
bowling alleys.
I saw them in bowling alleys. I saw them in Jeff Garland was telling me he saw them in an Algonquin church basement.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him in, what was it, third floor in Elgin, like at one point?
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like above carpet stores. Like, that's just where you see him, right? I'm so excited to talk to Josh.
Pequod's.
And now
Pequod's. People here are going to say, I remember seeing Josh Caterer at Pequod's. Well, wasn't that amazing?
He's like the original pop-up. Josh Caterer and the Smoking Popes. Smoking Popes were huge.
Yeah.
They had that record deal on Capitol Records. I forgot about that, you know? We'll talk with Josh about his world, and he got out of it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the Smoking Popes are still, I mean, it's one of those things where you break up and you get back together for reunion shows, that, whatever. But he's currently a pastor.
Yeah.
So he's found religion. He kind of got out of the basement punk. Now it's basement Bible studies,
uh-huh.
Less basement punk rock shows. It's probably a lot of the same stuff, right? We'll talk to Josh. I'm looking forward to it. You know, the tough part about doing the show tonight, Pete, is you and I are big fans of O.J.
We're not fans of O.J.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. I'm fans of O.J. Pete just likes the show. And it's on. It's on. We're missing. We're going to have to watch it on DVR. We DVR'd it. But.
Yeah, that show, I can't get enough. The People versus O.J. Simpson.
I said it yesterday. I mean, they have a new show coming out on HBO called Confirmation, which is Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill. The same concept. So it's like now we're just going to take stories from the 90s.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think. It's funny because I was like, I made the joke like Monica Lewinsky's next. That's obviously next.
And Meghan Trainor is going to play Monica Lewinsky. Mm-hmm. Watch. That's my prediction. But I was trying to think of other stories that would be good 90s stories to recreate for TV. It's like maybe what was the congressman who that was later, the what, Chandra Levy? Like the Foley, right?
Yeah, Mark Foley, I think, right?
Mark Foley? That wouldn't work. That's too niche. It'd have to be like, I mean, I don't even know. Like, what would it be? President Bush throwing up when he went on that trip to Japan? H dub? Nobody remembers that anymore. That's why you do a show about it. That's why FX brings back Vomit Japan, the people versus H.W. Bush. Remember when he threw up in Japan and they were mad about it?
Over the next 10 hours, we're going to take you back.
Yeah, there's got to be other stories, right? No? Do you have any thoughts? What do you think? Anybody out there, what do you think? Well, there wasn't much effort put into me actually asking anybody out there, to be honest with you. Okay, so when we come back, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get Keith up here because I want to talk to him about Pequods.
Yes.
I definitely, we'll get you up here. We'll talk about your career here in what's a good hockey? I'm trying to think of a hockey way to say it, like shoveling pizzas, like scoring pizzas.
Yeah, they shovel things.
They shovel things?
Yeah, don't they?
Troy, what do you say? Do you say, do you push the pizza?
Let's pass.
Push the pizza up the ice? Push the pace? Push. Judd? No?
Go off sides?
Yeah.
Icing?
Icing the pizza? Okay, none of this works. All right, we're live at Pequod's here on 2207 North Clybourne. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Broadcasting live from Pequod's Pizza in Chicago, home of the world-famous caramelized crust. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Texter just texted in 262 for a great show to sort of dramatize a news item like they're doing with OJ or what they're going to do with Anita Hill on HBO. Sosa McGuire, right? That would be a great 10-episode arc. Sosa McGuire.
Sosa.
Cuba Gooding Jr. as Sammy Sosa. Who would play McGuire? Toby Keith? He'd play a little. No? Nobody cares. All right. Keith Jackson's with me, everybody. The owner of Pequod's. Give it up. Keith, welcome to the tables, and thank you for having us here in your restaurant tonight.
Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
So let's talk about your career, because you started it. There's two Pequod's. There's one in Morton Grove, and there's one here. But you got started here in 1986. How did you get into Pequod's?
Well, without going into a real long story, I was a pharmacist by trade, and my accountant happened to know the then owner of Pequod's Pizza in Morton Grove. I proceeded to buy it. Then about 5 years later, 1992, I bought the building here in Chicago and built out the present restaurant in Chicago.
That was right to the point. That was good. feel free to embellish. But let me ask you, because, I mean, you got into, I mean, going from being a pharmacist to being a pizza guy, I mean, Chicago's a huge pizza town. What'd you know about deep dish pizza and everything about the lore around Chicago pizza when you got into it?
I knew nothing about it. I just loved pizza myself, but I didn't know a darn thing about cooking pizzas. All I knew is I went out and I ate a lot of pizzas. I used to like My Pie, as a matter of fact, on Clark Street
in
Fullerton. And my accountant came to me with this opportunity, and I said, you know, I'm not a cook. How am I going to do this? He says, well, you can learn, right? I hope so, and I was able to, and it worked out okay, but it was a little scary at times.
So what was, I mean, when you took over, I mean, Pequod's isn't the name that it is today, but when you took over, what was happening at the restaurant?
It was a real small mom-and-pa restaurant out in Morton Grove, very, very small volume institution. We were able to grow it by the grace of my customers and the loyalty. And then I decided I was going to venture into Chicago, Love Lincoln Park area, This area was in the upcoming stages. In 1991, I bought the building, and it opened the restaurant in 92. And it's just one of those miracle stories. You know, somebody upstairs likes me, and here everybody is, and I can't be
more grateful. Oh, this is a three
grateful.
I had no idea.
Yeah, no. Well, we're in Pequot heaven here, my friend.
Let me ask you about the style of pizza, because you guys do pan pizza, which is different than the stuffed pizza. You do a lot of different things, but pan is what you guys are known for. When did you go, that's what Pequot's is going to do?
You know, before I bought the place, I went into Pequod's, and I ate the food, and I really liked it, but I knew, you know, kind of felt there were some things I could do differently and change things, so I was able to do that. It didn't work out real well right away. There was always a few hiccups along the way, but, you know, we stuck with it. We refined it. We did a little scientific formulas to make sure everything was right and the product was coming out correct, and it worked.
Let me ask you, I mean, you probably see yourself as half pizza guy, half Blackhawks guy, right? Because this is an official Blackhawks bar as well. I mean, that's so well, talk about your relationship to hockey.
Well, my relationship to hockey started in 1963 when I met Gunzo, the owner of Gunzo Sports Center, who was then the equipment manager and backup spare goalie for the 60-61 Stanley Cup winning Blackhawks. He went in and opened a store, which primarily was open to serve the Blackhawks with their equipment and all their needs. So I met him in 1963. We became very, very close friends. He befriended me, which I'm very grateful for. I was very young, and I had pretty much of a fantasy upbringing, spending a lot of time in the locker room with Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita and all the old-time Hawk players. Wow. So it was kind of a fun thing. I lived the fantasy. I wasn't good enough to play at a professional level, but I enjoyed a lot of the fantasies we all have about sports or, you know, being a sports athlete.
For you, I mean, what's it like to see the resurgence of the Blackhawks here? I mean, to be someone who was involved with that, you know, even the locker room in the 60s, to be able to see what's happening now, that's got to be quite exciting, huh?
It's absolutely phenomenal. It's I didn't think I'd ever see another Stanley Cup. I got to see I was listening on the radio to the win in Detroit back then in 60-61, and then to wait 49 years, couldn't believe it, let alone three. So I had predicted that after they won the one that they would win five with the Kane and Taves combination. So I hope I'm right.
You're on your way. We're talking with Keith Jackson here. He's the owner of Pequod's, where we're broadcasting from live tonight. You know, before I let you go, there's so much that goes into rating Chicago's pizza, like the best. You know, everyone says the best. It's the best. I mean, I think I have on the menu, you have something that's like, it's the best. When you think about pizza in this city, where do you see yourself stacking up?
Well, I like to think that we have the best product. We've got a lot of competition and a lot of good competition. There's a lot of great pizza in Chicago. I mean, Chicago and New York are your best pizza places. There's no doubt about the city.
Chicago, then New York,
exactly. Chicago, then New York, absolutely. But we always, you know, we listen to what people say. We always do fine tweaks to our product to make sure we're producing the product that will be, you know, heads and heels above everybody else.
Do you find yourself at an advantage or disadvantage being in a neighborhood? Because, you know, a lot of the chains, the big stuff is downtown, and that attracts a tourist that comes in and goes, I got to try my Chicago pizza.
I love being in the neighborhood. It's, you know, I feel like I'm a part of a family here, and that's always been where I envisioned myself as a business person, was being one of the community. So
Keith Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, the owner of Pequod's, give it up. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
More to come here on the download. There you go. How about that, Pete? That's good. Keith's dead. Well, we could spend the next hour just talking about the 60-61 team, huh? I don't know much about it, but, yeah. We didn't really get into the Gunzo's, the hockey stuff either. But
well, we have a gift certificate to give away to Gunzo's to the lucky people that are here, and we still have a bunch of stuff to give away. So if you're in the neighborhood, come on down.
There you go. Listen to you. That's great. You just heard Pete. If you're in the neighborhood, come on down. We're giving away prizes in the breaks. We've got some gift certificates to give away to Gunzo's, also to Pequod's here. It's a download live at Pequod's Pizza on 2207 North Clybourne. We'll take a break. We come back. The news. Broadcasting live from Pequod's Pizza in Chicago. How y'all doing? Everybody out there is like, oh, man, I ate so much pizza. Zimmerman's the only one clapping at this point. Jake's got it, too. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download live here at Pequod's Pizza in Lincoln Park, home of the world-famous caramelized crust. We're with you till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez takes over with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Coming up at the 10 o'clock hour, Josh Caterer's going to be here. The Smoking Popes bringing his guitar as well. He's going to perform live. So excited to talk to Josh. I've wanted to talk to him for so long about his career. Tremendous musician. I mean, started that band in 1991, was opening for Green Day by 1994, was signed to Capitol Records by 1995, and they broke up by 1998. Like, it was like boom, boom, boom. One of the most influential bands in Chicago history, the Smoking Popes. Josh Caterer will be here coming up at 10 o'clock. Right now, comic Robin Norris had an idea. She set up a few dating profiles on OkCupid, the popular dating site, and they were fake, but the interactions that came about were real. 38 undateable profiles were created, and the results are part of the show Date Me, an OkCupid experiment, a scientific experiment about the online search for love. It's up. It's at the Up Theater till the end of May. Robin Norris currently lives in L.A., where the show runs out of Second City Hollywood. And she is here in Chicago now. Robin, thanks for being a guest
today.
Hey,
thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for being here. All right, so let's talk about this because, you know, talk about the idea to do this because it seems like a weird kind of thing to just think up out of thin air. Like, you know what I'm going to do? I'll just put some fake profiles up.
Super weird, man. It was a complete accident, actually. I was just sitting at home one day and a good friend of mine, Lori, called me up and she was like, are you on OkCupid? And I was kind of offended because I actually had never done online dating and I was just like, no, why? And she had just set up her profile and she's like, could you just like log on, see if I wrote anything weird? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. But you have to have a profile
right,
to look
to
at
see.
People's
yeah,
profiles.
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea. So I was just bored and I took 5 minutes and created this crazy cat lady. And on OkCupid, you can write your own profile. So it's not like Tinder or anything. It's like you can write a biography. So I called her Tracy Loves Cats and every question, I just was very one note, like, I love kitties! On a typical Friday night, I play with my kitties! And just kind of did it, checked out Lori's profile, and forgot about it. And a couple days later, I was sitting, I went to dinner with some girlfriends and logged on, and I was like, oh my God.
What did you find?
Hundreds of messages from men, and just the funniest stuff.
Did they recognize that it was fake and they were like kind of playing along, or did you get a lot of, you got kind of both?
It's both. It's both. But like some men like took a lot of time to craft like full paragraphs of meows and like cat speak. And I was like, what? Lots of sexual innuendos as to be expected.
Right.
But people were really playing along. I think a lot of them were interested. I put a picture of myself and it was just like a cheesy picture. So I'd say it's probably half and half. I think people were in on it, but some people weren't. And then
they may have saw it as like that they wanted to play along and they thought that was part of the
exactly.
The fun of it. Yeah.
Exactly. And it dawned on me like, okay, Tracy Loves Cats has way more men interested in her than I do. That's kind of weird. So my good friend Bob Ladwig and I, we were working on some stuff together and I kind of said, what if, you know, we did an experiment and we made undateable personalities. And so we held a photo shoot with some other good friends and then we wrote 38 different profiles.
38.
Kind of got carried away.
So you put 38 profiles up on OkCupid.
Uh-huh. And then we tracked the results. And we had all these rules. Like, we're like, we're not going to lead people on.
Right.
We don't want to be mean. Like, we're not going to meet them in person. Like, play with people's emotions. But we also had to stay in character. So they were very – I tried to think, like, okay, from the male perspective, like, what's a female looking for? So we created Marry Me Now Stat. And his picture is him holding a wedding ring. And he's like, I've already got the ring. I just need the finger.
Now, again, were you getting responses from those people that the same kind of thing that they're playing along? Or as you created more, were there more people that were thinking, just taking it at face value?
I think it was both. I will say there were a lot of people who seemed really genuine. And I tried really hard not to mess with them. And in fact, I got really overly emotional and would start worrying about them. And I'd be like, I just started seeing someone, but you're so awesome. Like... if I really thought they were serious, if they were just playing along, then I would play along in character. Like, right. We had this lady, Pioneer in a Box, and she, her whole thing is, like, she works in a historical museum. She never breaks character. And men would be like, I want to churn butter with you in the barn. And I'm like, okay, they're in on it.
Yeah, they're in on it.
Yeah.
But until they're not.
Until they're not.
Until they're not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, take us through the journey, because, okay, so you set all this stuff up, you make it happen. Mm-hmm. How do you go from the profiles to an actual comedy show?
Yeah, that was interesting, you know, because we did the experiment, and I'm attention to detail. Like, I spent a lot of time doing the research. I kind of started to find similarities. I categorized people into online dating species, like, did all this stuff. But then Bob and I were like, yeah, we should translate this into something, because it's too funny, it's too interesting. But we weren't sure how to put it on the stage. But we got a director, Frank Caietti.
Yeah.
We got a slot at Second City Hollywood, thought we would run for 3 months. And we chose to present it as an experiment, and that's how we wrote the show. So it's kind of my journey and how I kind of got in a little too deep.
You created the characters already. So,
yeah.
Right.
And then we present it with, like, profile names on the screen, and we make it clear to the audience, like, the dialogue's verbatim. Here's what we found. And just kind of took off from there, because online dating is so popular right now. It just resonated. So.
Well, we'll talk more about that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break in just a second here. But, I mean, getting it up on stage, was the intention to make it a more standard kind of Second City type show where you have sketches and characters? And
it was not. I wanted to do something a little different. I've done a lot of sketch, and I wanted to do something with a through line, and I was pretty adamant. A lot of people would be like, let's just improvise. And I was like, no, I really want this to be, like, verbatim. Like, this is the people we interacted with. This is what we found. So we have it's mostly written. We have one improv segment at the end of the first act, which is so fun, but everything else is really tightly scripted.
What do audiences did they question whether or not you actually did this experiment?
It's been interesting. You know, it's my name on it, so a lot of people think it's real, but then I've done the show here in Chicago. We did it intermittently all last year, and people would be like, are you really the real girl? Did you really do that? And so we have to say over and over, even in the beginning of the show, like, this is real. This really happened. Because people think it's too crazy to make up, I think.
Have you ever been in a situation, probably not, but have you been in a situation where any of the people that you've interacted with have come to the show or known
not
that you're
yet.
Even doing it?
Not yet.
Right now they're like, Crazy Cat Lady's got a show? What?
No, not yet. But I will say, you know, we picked the top 10 dating cities, and Chicago is one of them, but we only posted, I think, one profile here. So since the show's been running on a bigger scale, if we go to Dallas or Boston, I'm going to get caught.
You're going to get caught. You've got to stay out of Dallas.
Yeah.
You got to stay out of Dallas. Robin Norris, the show, hashtag date me, an OkCupid experiment, right?
Yep.
Is at the Up Theater through the end of May. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about your experience, not just with evolving the show, because you've been on stage now for a couple of years in Hollywood, so now you have to evolve it to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But also just about your understanding of online dating from being a part of this.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
got to
be strange.
Yep, I learned
Robin
a lot.
Robin Norris here on The Download Live at Pequod's Pizza in Lincoln Park. Stay with us. It's The Download Live here at Pequod's Pizza in Lincoln Park. I'm Justin Kaufman, 720 WGN. Woo! There's a couple of booths that have opened up. That's what I love about doing a broadcast. Here, we're at the second floor of Pequod's. And as you get a little later into the night, you know, people are like, dinner's over. So, I mean, Josh Cater is coming up. He's going to perform a little bit. And there are two booths. For any of the people like me who clogged into the, you know, into the bottom of a basement in Algonquin and had to be in the back with my shoulders, you know, didn't want to knock something off of whoever's basement it was, you know, like all the knickknacks. Now's the time. You have a booth right here. I feel like I want to go back to my 20-year-old self and be like, get over here. Pequod's, 2207 Clybourne. In studio or with me right here at the table right now is Robin Norris. We're talking about her show, hashtag date me, an OkCupid experiment, a scientific experiment about the online search of love. It's on stage at the Up Theater, which is part of the Second City Complex at Piper's Alley, and it's up until the end of May. Robin, this show has been on stage for a couple years now in Hollywood,
we're
right?
We're coming up at 3 years.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's a long time for a stage show.
Yeah.
Talk about evolving that show. So it can't just be the same bit over and over, especially when you had so much success doing it week after week.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, it's right now it's the longest running scripted show they've ever had at Second City Hollywood, because you do have to evolve and change. However, for whatever reason, this one is bringing in more, I would call it, general public people than in L.A. It's a little different. It's a lot of, you know, friends and people in the improv community. And after a couple months, it started being other people. So, you know, we have changed it and adapted it over the last 3 years, tightened things, added some new material, but...
Do you have to go back to OKCupid and get new stuff?
Well, I did when I did a major rewrite, when we expanded it. So what happened is we've been running in Hollywood, and then our producer, Diane Alexander, saw it out there. And so she was like, something is interesting about this. So we had to fly, you know, one of the founders of OKCupid out to see it to get permission. Because otherwise, you know, show's over.
Right.
So it was a little nerve-wracking. And then I've spent, like, the last 2 years really building out the show. So, yeah, I did log back on to see if some of the people had responded, you know, to the characters again. And I've been rewriting it for the past 2 years. We just did a pretty major rewrite over the last 2 months and just reopened. So if anyone saw it last year, it's quite different.
Well, even online dating as a concept has changed in 3 years. I mean, even OKCupid, to an extent, has, even though it's still one of the more popular, if not the most popular dating site, the pop cultural part of it, the you know, Tinders and the other dating sites have kind of taken over from
Absolutely.
It. So, I mean, even online dating in itself has evolved.
It's so different. And I didn't really realize what a thing it was, because I was so stubborn that I was going to meet my love in person, you know, until I did this experiment. But, yeah, Tinder's huge. And that's totally great. Like, I respect all of the forms of online dating. I've come to have a respect for it. But OKCupid is unique in that you can, like I said, write your profile.
You can write
your own thing. So it's like you get to write how people view you, which I find really fascinating.
For you, I mean, you kind of talked about how you had a more romanticized, old-fashioned way of approaching dating. How has online dating or writing a comedy show about online dating changed your perspective?
It's changed it a lot. And like I said, we had a lot of people who were doing the standard, like, perverted messages and stuff. Yeah. However, then I started really reading people's profile pages, and I did get really, like, connected to people. I was like, oh, my God, they're all just – I tend to read into people. I'm like, everyone's lonely like me. But I was like, oh, my God, they're all, like – everyone's just searching. Even if they are perverted, they just want love. And, like, I just, like, got really ridiculous. But it is true. It's not really that different from the real world, you know? Just like in the 90s, you'd meet at bars, and you still do. But now you connect online, and then you meet in person. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much more open to it than I was previously.
What about the experience, I mean, you think draws people to your show? I mean, because, you know, like you said, it's not just the friends and other improviser industry people coming to the show. You're getting regular people in L.A., which is a feat.
It is. Yeah,
but
it is.
But to come to your show, what do you think it is about a comedy show about online dating?
I think it's a couple things. I think the subject matter is pretty relevant to everyone, because even if you've never online dated, you've encountered the types of people that I encountered. It is a funny show, so I think that's part of it. But we also worked really hard to put, like, a narrative into it, so it's more like a full theatrical piece.
Right.
So there's heart to it as well. It's not just a comedy show. But I think the main thing is just it's the subject matter. It's in the zeitgeist right now.
What I mean, what have you – it's interesting because I've never online dated, so it's not a thing. But, I mean, I think about it, and I'm like, there must be so many – stereotypes involved in it, because of just the fact that friends of mine who've told me about it have been like, yeah, it takes 10 seconds for someone to want to have sex. Like, that's essentially it, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's that. There's people have their pet peeves, you know, people get really upset about grammar. You know, really upset. Like, if you don't know the difference between Y-O-U apostrophe R-E and Y-O-U-R, do not message me. Like, just, like, ranting. It's like, all right, okay,
it's
calm down.
I think we'll be okay, right?
Yeah. Lots of people say the same things. Like, everyone loves to laugh. Everyone loves to travel. And it's
at
like,
this point, after making, you know, 38 different profiles and spending so much time researching online dating, Do you, I mean, are you just like old hat at it? Are you just like, okay, all right, yeah, you love to laugh, you love to travel.
Kind of, you know, and I did do a lot of research. Like, we flew out to visit OKCupid. We got some stats and some research from them. And I did learn that, like, the more specific you are on your profile, the better matches you'll have. And I would say most people are not that specific because they're trying to put their best foot forward, and they just kind of water it down a little bit. And then my characters were so one note that I think that's why people were like, oh, this is fun. We're going to respond.
The show is on stage at the Up Theater in, I guess, the Old Town right there at Piper's Alley in the Second City Complex till the end of May. It's called Hashtag Date Me, an OK Cupid Experiment. Robin Norris is the writer and creator of the show, and she's here. I mean, you live in L.A. You're here for the whole show? You're here for the whole run?
Yeah, I'm back and forth, but I'm mostly in Chicago right now. So.
Well, great to see you, and congrats with the show, and good luck. Go see it. Again, Date Me, an OK Cupid Experiment. At the Up Theater in Old Town. All right, give it up for Robin.
Thank you.
More to come here live at Pequod's, a download on WGN. Stay with us. We're back here at Pequod's Pizza in Lincoln Park. Woo! What's up? All right, how about it? We've been here the whole night. It feels like it was 2 weeks ago that Troy and Judd were on at 7 o'clock talking Blackhawks, and we've been on since 8 o'clock here. Hey, look who walks in the door. Duffy. A great night here. Thanks to the guys at Pequod's Pizza. Tremendous night all the way around, so we appreciate it. We're here till 11 o'clock. Patty Vasquez coming up at 11. All right, well, my guest this hour, live at Pequod's, is the one and only Josh Caterer. Caterer was the front man of the Chicago area band, the Smoking Popes, a band that he formed with his brothers. The Smoking Popes formed in the northwestern suburbs, and by 1994, were opening up for Green Day. Anyone who grew up within, I don't know, 60 miles of Algonquin's probably seen the Popes live in a basement or a church or above a carpet store. I feel like that's where I saw it. They were the face of punk rock in the mid-90s behind the albums Born to Quit and Destination Failure. They signed to a major label, Capitol Records, and re-released Born to Quit and got major radio play for the single Need You Around. They broke up a few years later, but they have stayed in the area and they've reunited for big shows at Metro and other places. They got back together to record some other stuff, the last album in 2011. Caterer still lives his life in music. He's the pastor of music and worship at Calvary Memorial Church in Oak Park. And he is my guest tonight on The Download. Josh Caterer, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's
great
awesome
to be here.
To see you. I kind of say, you know, at the end of that intro, I say you still live your life in music. What drew you to music to begin with?
Oh, well, the home that I grew up in, we were kind of saturated in music. Our parents listened to a lot of music all the time. They had a lot of albums. Our dad had like hundreds and hundreds of vinyl LPs, mostly, you know, stuff that is now classic rock, but at the time it was, you know, contemporary rock. He had all the original pressings of all the Beatles records, and he had the Stones and the Who and Zeppelin and a lot of blues stuff.
Yeah.
And then our mom liked country music, so she had all these Willie Nelson records and Kenny Rogers and Conway Twitty and people like that. So there was always music playing.
The owners
of
the Nashville Predators.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
So we just, you know, but by the time, you know, we could talk, we were already well-versed in various genres of music, and we were just raised. The way, you know, we have to attribute that to our parents and give them props for musicalizing us.
Well, I mean, I mentioned you formed the band with your brothers.
Yes.
You've been musical with your brothers even before the Smoking Popes. You were in other bands with them, or you've been in other bands.
Well, yeah,
we formed
a band when I was in high school called Speed Stick, and it sort of evolved into the Smoking Popes.
When did you realize that, you know what, I could play this instrument, the guitar, and I might want to think about a career in music?
Oh, you know, I guess from being a kid looking at my AC/DC records, you know, just sort of thinking about how cool Angus Young was when I was like 9 years old, the seeds were planted of like, I want to do that. I want to be there. You know, the cover of Let There Be Rock by AC/DC, and you got Angus Young standing there in the spotlight. And there's like, he's on stage and there's a crowd in front of him, and Bon Scott is sort of lurking behind him, seemingly with this ill intent on his face. And like that, you know, to picture yourself on that stage, that's the dream
what did it.
Right there.
Well, let me ask you, because you mentioned AC/DC, you mentioned the classic rock, the Beatles, the Stones, you talked, about the country music influence. When you started playing music and in high school and even with the Smoking Popes, what drew you to the style of music that you guys created, punk rock? I mean, you guys were a punk rock band, and what set you apart was your vocals. But talk about what got you into punk rock.
Well, I'm trying to think of how that actually started. I mean, there was such an embracing of different musical genres in our house, and when punk came along, I guess that was something that us kids gravitated towards that our parents didn't like. So there's kind of an appeal there.
Right.
Instead of just adopting all of their musical tastes, you can actually get into something that your parents sort of cringe at. So there's a certain pleasure in that.
And it was a style of music that was becoming more, I don't want to say popular, that's not the right word, but it was accessible. The punk rock music in the late 80s and the 90s that more kids, counterculture kids, were getting into.
Yeah. And, but even the stuff that we really got into when we were young and first starting out, there was plenty of gritty punk and we were listening to a little bit of like old Black Flag and stuff. But the stuff that really kind of resonated with us, and particularly with me, was the more melodic stuff like the Buzzcocks and the Undertones. And so, bands that definitely were punk but brought a nice sense of melody along with it.
Well, let's talk about that, because one of the things that sets the Smoking Popes apart from your cookie cutter punk rock band has been your vocal stylings. I mean, a lot of times critics will say that you sound more like Morrissey than the Ramones. But you did bring a more kind of crooner style to punk rock with the Smoking Popes than say your counterparts at the time.
Well, you got to have a gimmick, Justin.
Well, you want to play something? You want to play a little Smoking Popes? Should we do it?
I could, sure.
Should we do it? Should we play? Should we hear a little Smoking Popes? What are we going to hear here?
I'll do something kind of croony for you.
All right, croony.
I'll do our crooniest song for you.
Josh Caterer, Smoky Popes, live here on the Download. Croony.
If I could see into your heart, then would I know just where to start? Because I'm lost and I need to be found. Crazy as it sounds, I need you around. If I could stand to be on my own, then I would probably just leave you alone. But I'm gonna feel this way till I'm 6 feet underground. Crazy as it sounds, I need you. Turning, tossing and turning, my love is burning me down. If I could change one thing in this world, I'd change your mind. I'd make you my girl. Cause I'm lost and I need to be found. Crazy as it sounds, I need you around. I'm gonna feel this way till I'm 6 feet underground. Crazy as it sounds, girl, I need you around. I need you around. I need you around. I need.
Give it up for Josh Caterer here at the Pequod's live remote here at 227 North Quadrant. How about that?
To play at Pequod's.
You played church basements. You played above carpet stores.
Yeah.
Now you played Pequod's.
Yep.
It's pretty
bucket
amazing.
List. Bucket list. List thing for me.
More with Josh when we return here on the Down. Let's take a break. Live at Pequod's at 2207 North Claiborne. Josh Caterer and the Smoking Popes. More. Stay with us. We're back here live at Pequod's Pizza up in Lincoln Park. It's a download. WGN, I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome to hear that song. I mean, at this time to play that song, because that was your major, like, single, right? That was,
it
like,
was.
Your time. Do you ever go, all right, enough of that song?
No, I love that song. That song is a good friend of mine.
So, you know, let's talk about you guys, you know, because we kind of – talked about your style, we heard the music, but you guys really forged, or I guess you started off 1991-ish?
That's when the band started.
Yeah, and talk about what you were, talk about where you started and what you were doing at that time before the major label stuff.
Well, we started out in the suburbs. We lived in Lake in the Hills, which is like right next to Algonquin, and our drummer was from Crystal Lake. So we started playing out there, and we would just play in, like, people's garages and basements. And there was a club, an all-ages club in Elmhurst called McGregor's. Did you ever go there?
Yes, I did. Sludgeworth.
Sludgeworth. And, man, just all the cool bands. Like, I used to go there and see Apocalypse Hoboken.
Right.
And they were, like, this amazing live band, and they were just so much fun. And I was briefly a member of Apocalypse Hoboken.
Really? This is...
Yes. This is my big claim to fame, Justin. Is that I played guitar on an Apocalypse Hoboken album called Punish the Innocent.
Okay.
That came out only on cassette.
Right. Which was that was an upgrade.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that was exciting. And so we kind of got our start, I would say, at McGregor's. That's when we really started to develop a following, so that by the time we made it to the Metro, like, that, you know, we got an opportunity to play like on a Wednesday night at the Metro. At they used to have punk nights, and you could just kind of have all these underground kind of DIY type bands playing. But when we played there, we brought with us,
right,
you know,
this
couple hundred people that had been seeing us at McGregor's. And they came in and saw us at the Metro, and so that is something that really helped us.
Well, since, you know, that's what it. I mean, you think about it, that's what makes or breaks a great band. I mean, the following, and you guys were able to attract a huge following that would take to go to Wednesday night at the Metro, and pretty much sell that place out. I mean, there were a lot of people coming out to see the Smoking Popes. I mean, it's almost like you. I kind of made the joke. If anyone lived within 60 miles of Algonquin, they knew the Smoking Popes. You really kind of you energized the northwestern suburbs to follow you wherever you went.
Did you really see us above a
I feel like it was a carpet store, right? Like in Elgin or something like that.
We did play at like the upper level of like an art gallery.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Maybe that's that, yeah. That seems a little too posh from what I remember. But
right,
that, but there was something about you guys as a punk rock band and the bands at that time that you were playing a lot of basements. You were playing a lot of places that aren't necessarily music venues. Talk about the relationship
with
house parties and things like that.
You know, clubs are cool, and I love particularly playing the Metro. That's a very special place. But there's always a unique energy when you play somewhere that music isn't necessarily supposed to be played. For example, last year we did a show at a restaurant called the Milk Pail out in Dundee. And it was like a benefit show, and there was kind of a banquet room that I'm sure had never had rock music played in there before. So they just dragged in one of those PA systems, like the one we have here, that's like on a stick.
Right.
And had some
everything
bands
goes through
play.
That, right.
Yeah, but like I think there's something about that environment that kind of brings a different energy to it. Like there's a novelty, like it's cool to be at a show, but can you believe this is happening here?
Right, right. So, you know, you took that following. You mentioned Metro. You went to – but it was when you started to – you opened for Green Day. And then you guys, kind of became swept up in the whole sort of 90s alt-rock explosion here, whether it's the Smashing Pumpkins and all those kind of bands.
You know, the 90s were a crazy time.
That's what they say, right?
It was a different era. There was a lot of bands getting signed out of Chicago in the 90s. But since you mentioned Green Day I have to say that they're the ones that I think are most directly responsible for us getting signed. Because when their album Dookie came out, they became these huge sensations. They were like selling millions, and they became one of the biggest rock bands in the world, which I guess they still are. They've held on to their
right.
their place on the throne there for decades. But at that time, they were this hot new band. And when they came through Chicago, they requested us to open for them because they somehow knew who we were. We had our first album, Get Fired, was
great
out.
Record. That was a great album,
well,
by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. But it was a very obscure album at the time, and it was just out on a small indie label. So you really had to, in order to own that album, you had to have like your finger on the pulse of the punk scene.
Right.
But those guys did. And so they knew who we were, and they were fans, and so they came through Chicago. And they were really good about taking, you know, lesser-known bands that they liked and bringing them along for the ride. And they did that with a few other bands, and we were one of the bands that they did that with. So, and they would, not only at that show, but they were talking about us in interviews and mentioning us as one of the bands that they thought were good. So eventually their management team attempted to start their own label and called us and asked us to be on it, which in itself kind of was the tipping of the first domino in like what became a bidding war. But it was really started by Green Day and their support. So
what was
eternally
it like,
grateful to those guys.
What was
guys.
It like to be a part, I mean, to be someone from Lake in the Hills, brothers playing together to have this following, to then be a part of a bidding war? I mean, you guys, and it wasn't the right time, right perfect time, right?
They don't have bidding wars anymore.
No, that's all gone.
There's nothing to bid with anymore.
But there was. I mean, it's amazing to think that, you know, like that, I mean, people wanted the Smoking Popes. They wanted everything. And you guys went and signed with Capitol Records.
Yeah. It was
for a band out of Lake in the Hills.
It was surreal to us. We really did feel like we were swept up in something otherworldly at the time. And so, you know, I look back and it was a unique time in our career because, you know, after we broke up and got back together, we've enjoyed a lot of enthusiastic support from our fans, but there never was again an era like that in the music industry because the industry had kind of, by the time we got back together, it was kind of deflating.
It was going the other way, yeah.
So, you know, that was just a chance for us to do like the Hollywood thing. And when we went and were being courted by different labels and we went and visited the Capitol building, we asked if we could go up on the roof. And they told us that, like, this person that was kind of taking us around the building, like introducing us to all the people at Capitol, we said, "Can we go up on the roof?" And they were like, "I don't know. Nobody has ever asked for that before.
Nobody in the history of Capitol
Records. Let me get back to you. I have to like ask the head of security to see if we can take a band up on the roof." So eventually they came back and said, yeah, I guess, you know, we just have to be careful and stay away from the edge.
Don't fall. Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes is my guest tonight here at Pequot's Live, 2207 North Clybourne. We'll take a break. We'll come back more with Josh here on The Download. Stay with us. We're live at Pequot's Pizza here in Lincoln Park. Pizza's still coming out. Still coming out here. Pequot's Pizza in Chicago, home of the world famous caramelized crust. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download. My guest tonight, Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes. We're talking music and listening to music. Now, since Smoking Popes, you've been in a lot of other bands. I mean, you've been doing other things, and you're playing a show at Double Door in March.
I am with this other band that I'm in called Jackson Mud, which is kind of a blues band that I started up last year, and having a lot of fun with that. And we've got an EP out called Downtime Blues. Can I play you one of
the
songs?
Let's play, yeah.
What
is it?
All right, the song is called I Just Don't Care No More.
I Just Don't Care No More. Josh Caterer, Jackson Mud, is going to be playing at Double Door on St. Patrick's Day.
There you go. I used to cry, I used to moan, and pray that you would come on home. Now I'm all cried out, my tears have dried out, and I just don't care no more. I used to burn jealousy, 'cause you were running around on me. Now I'm all burned out, my lessons learned out, and I just don't care no more. I got so tired of staying up nights and wondering about the company you keep. Since I gave up on loving you, can finally give me some sleep. Well, I used to waste my precious time just wishing you still be mine. Now I'm all wished out, my heart's been dished out, and I just don't care no more.
Just don't care no more.
I just don't care no more, Justin.
Jackson Mud. He's playing
playing at the Double Door on St. Patrick's Day. So we're
how about
kind of excited
that?
About that one.
You know, it when listening to that song, I was like, I just don't care no more from Josh Caterer, the Smoking Popes. I think about this. I haven't asked about your songwriting, because all those songs were love songs. They're punk rock songs, and instead of I just don't care no more, it was more like I can't wait to love you. Like, it was
right.
Like, so talk about like those songs and where they came from, because you've always had almost like romanticism at the heart of the lyrics that you write.
Well, you know, as we've talked about earlier, you know, we were always bringing together different musical styles from different eras. And I think the stylistic way that we play our instruments was influenced more by, you know, punk bands like the Ramones and the Buzzcocks and people like that. But the songwriting, I would say, probably my biggest influences as a songwriter were like the soundtracks of old movie musicals.
Okay.
Like from, you know, watching like old Fred Astaire movies and, you know, songs that were written by like the Gershwin brothers and Irving Berlin and, you know, like the soundtrack from The Music Man and like this, that sort of, there's like a romantic kind of naive yet sophisticated kind of vibe.
Optimism.
Yeah,
that's a good word that pops.
Like you listen to, you know, Frank Sinatra would take a lot of those songs from that were written for movies and kind of just turn them into standards. But his music always had this kind of, like he seemed kind of edgy and worldly, but at the same time there was like an innocence, like there's almost a wholesomeness to it. And there's something really cool about that combination. I wanted to bring that together, and a lot of that is love songs. You know, he's just singing about having a broken heart and the one that got away, and so that's where that influence comes from.
You know, for you, the Smoking Popes obviously is a pop band, and you mentioned Green Day giving you a shot and working at Capitol Records. But you stood out because you were singing this way, because you were singing love songs, and it wasn't sort of your standard punk rock fare. Do you think, you just talked about the influences and where that came from, but did, you know, you personally, Josh Caterer, were people always coming up to you and being like, oh, I love it, I love how much you sing, and did was there like a constant like conflict with that? Like the idea that that's not necessarily me, that might be what I sing about, or was that purely you?
Oh, I think that was me, because, I mean, there were the influences of, you know, the songwriters I was listening to. But then there was also the sheer fact that girls were all I thought about. So it was pretty much, you know, where my heart was. Just like, and I figured writing love songs was the best way to impress girls and get them to, you know, think that I was very romantic and things like that.
So. For I will say for all of the songs that Smoking Pope songs that made it on mixtapes that I made when I was you succeeded.
Well, good.
It was they're like you like
glad
the Smoking Pope.
Like, service. To
yeah,
you.
Thank you. That's why you're here, Josh Caterer, the Smoking Pope. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Josh here live for Pequod's Pizza. Stay with us. Live here at Pequod's Pizza for the final stretch. Patty Vasquez coming up next. Back in the studio, pretty late with Patty Vasquez. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is a download. My guest, Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes. Ah, so awesome. All right, so let's talk about let's wrap up the Pope story because
let's be done with it.
Let's ask because you know we kind of left it in the narrative of it. Had you guys at Capitol Records, but that yeah. didn't last very long. Talk about your time there and the subsequent end of.
I mean, we were probably on Capitol for a couple years, and they picked up an album that had previously been released on Johann's Face, which is a Chicago indie label.
Yeah.
So they reissued that, and then we recorded one album for Capitol that they put out, but. You know, it would be a long story to describe to you just the personal struggles that we were going through. But part of it was just having a hard time adjusting to the whirlwind of everything.
You guys personally, not necessarily the, you know, the big bad man with a capital M at Capitol Records.
Well, back in those days, if you were a punk band, you were worried about something known as selling out. I don't think people care about that anymore because it just seems like bands will shamelessly take whatever opportunities to exploit their own music that they can. Everybody applauds that. But back in that era, a punk band to sign to a major label was frowned upon, and it was like sort of the equivalent of like, you know, when Dylan went electric and a lot of his fan base kind of turned on him like, you've betrayed us. And so
we were worried about that.
We were kind of paranoid about that. And it took us to a dark place in our own mind. And so we didn't, we weren't very cooperative with a lot of the things that the label wanted to do, and we had a rocky relationship with them as a result of that. And we ended up feeling like we wanted to not be on a major label anymore. And so we kind of tried to get out of our contract with Capitol by recording an album for them that we knew they would not like. And so we went in and recorded an album entirely of covers, mostly of like show tunes, the kind of stuff I was telling you about, like covers of Judy Garland songs, and
one of which you did the Willy Wonka song that came out at one point.
That came out on Destination Failure, which was our previous Capitol release. Oh, I love that song. That's a beautiful song. But no, and the album that we ended up making was called The Party's Over, and I like it, but we knew the album wasn't going to be received well by the label, and so we submitted that to them, and they were like, no, this isn't going to cut it. And we're like, well, then just let us out of our contract. And they said, okay. And they even said, you can take the album with you. And we ended up releasing that on an indie after that. So it came out. But that's how our relationship with Capitol ended.
Not too far after that. I mean, within a couple of years, the Smoking Popes broke up.
Yes.
Talk about why they broke up. And is it more difficult to break up with a band that's family?
Oh, I don't know, because this is the only band that I've ever broken up from. So I don't know how to compare it to another band, except for, you know, I guess I quit Apocalypse Hoboken, but I feel like that was just
you demanded too much off the cassette royalties.
That was an interim position to begin with. But I think that the fact that it was my brothers in the band actually made them more supportive in a way of the fact that I quit, because really the reason why the band broke up is because I quit having to do with my at that time newfound Christian faith, which was a life-changing, it took things in a whole different direction for me, and I at that time didn't feel like Christianity was compatible with rock music, so I just had to quit.
Because of the lifestyle, because of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
I mean, like, you know, we weren't raised in the church or with the faith or anything like that. So it was a complete 180 for my whole worldview. And it just seemed so counter to the way that I'd been living up to that time that I couldn't reconcile the two. But my brothers were, you know, they were bummed about the fact that the band was going to be stopping. But they were supportive of the fact that I had found something which was obviously helpful to me, because I had gotten to sort of a bad place personally.
And they knew it because they were there.
They were there and they were family. And so they were like, I remember my brother Eli just saying to me, well, man, I'm bummed, but I'm glad that you found something that makes you happy. So, you know, he's a supportive guy, and we're just, the caterers are a very encouraging and supportive people. It's a trait of ours.
We're talking with Josh Caterer here on The Download as we wrap up on the live broadcast here at Pequod's. Let's hear a track. If you got one more song in you tonight?
I got one more song.
All right, good.
Dude, I got a million more songs in me, but I only got time to play one.
All right, so what are you going to play?
How about Megan? You want to hear that?
I'll take Megan. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Josh Cater, of the Smoking Popes, live at Pequod's. Megan.
Here we go. But on a summer day when she's around, I was on the tracks when the gate came down. Suddenly I recognize those bloodshot rear view, near her eyes as mine. I heard that whistle call my name. I almost drove away, but Megan, I
caught a ride to another town where the air was clean and the sun never goes down. Everyone was standing in the line between the landing and the stairs. I heard somebody call my name. I almost climbed the stairs, but Megan and I had a feeling that someday so I just waited there for you. Oh, 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 oh. But on a summer day when I hear that name, sat down on the tracks and waited for a train to take me back to you. Somebody came and took my hand. I finally had to go, but maybe